It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Illinois is a major exporting state, fourth or fifth in the country, depending on which government agency's numbers you're using. Last year, Illinois exports hit a record, nearly $81 billion worth of goods, supporting more than 313,000 jobs. That's according to the Office of the U.S. Trade Representatives. Our top trading partners are, in ascending order, Germany, China, Australia, Mexico, and, number one with a bullet, Canada. Oh, Canada, our neighbor to the north, our best friend on the continent, and a country that President Trump seems intent on conquering. I think that's a fair way to describe it. Here he is last week.
You know, the United States can't subsidize a country for $200 billion a year. We don't need their cars. We don't need their energy. We don't need their lumber. We don't need anything that they give. We do it because we want to be helpful, but it comes a point when you just can't do that. You have to run your own country. And to be honest with you, Canada only works as a state. It doesn't. We don't need anything they have. As a state, it would be one of the great states anyway. This would be the most incredible country visually. If you look at a map, they drew an artificial line right through it between Canada and the U.S. Just a straight artificial line. Somebody did it a long time ago.
So far, the main weapon Trump is using in his crusade against Canada is the tariff. He's also imposed them on goods from Mexico and China, and he says more are coming on products from the European Union and the United Kingdom. So what does Trump's apparent commitment to tariffs as a policy tool mean for Illinois' exporting power? Joining us to talk more about that is Cecile Shea. She's at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, where she's a non-resident senior fellow on global security and diplomacy. She previously had 2 decades of experience as an American diplomat with postings in Japan, Thailand, Pakistan, Scotland, and Israel. Cecile, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. It's great to be here. And that was a great interview with Sean Casten also.
Oh, thank you. And also with us is Dr. Barbara Ribbons, director of the Carson and Iris Varner International Business Institute at Illinois State University. She has a PhD in business administration and management from the University of Connecticut. Barbara, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And listeners, our phones are open for the rest of the hour today, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. What do you think of President Trump's tariff policies so far? Maybe you work in an industry that could be particularly affected by this, farming, manufacturing. I'd love to hear from you at 800-222-9455. All right, Barbara Ribbons, I'm going to start with a very basic question. What is a tariff?
A tariff is basically a tax on imported goods. The idea behind a tariff is to make the prices of foreign goods higher so that we can protect the national goods. That's the real basic of what it is.
Sure.
So it directly affects consumers.
Yeah, and I was going to add, well, that's my next question. Who pays a tariff?
The consumers do. It always goes to the consumers because the idea is to manipulate the market and cause people to prefer the national goods over the foreign goods.
All right, Cecile Shea. So generally speaking, from what we've seen in the past, how do tariffs affect international trade and export markets?
So just to clarify one thing, traditionally, as Barbara just said, tariffs were used to raise the price of American goods so that people raise the price of imported goods so that people would, for instance, buy American goods if you're talking about U.S. tariffs. A lot of President Trump's tariffs are on goods that the U.S. either cannot produce itself or does not produce itself. So it's not even that Americans have a choice in many cases. So for instance, if you are a farmer and you rely on potash, which if you've ever bought houseplant fertilizer or fertilizer for your garden, there are 3 numbers on it. And one of those 3 numbers is potash. We import over 90% of our potash from Canada. Canada is the largest exporter of potash in the world. And we don't really have potash reserves. It's a mineral that you mine. We don't have potash reserves here. So farmers are stuck. They have to use Canadian potash. We import 25% of our uranium from Canada. We do have uranium reserves in the U.S., but it is of a much lower quality. So So while historically tariffs were designed to raise the price of imported goods and push folks toward American goods, these tariffs are really a problem because many, many of the goods cannot be purchased or cannot be made in the U.S. or are not made in the U.S. And indeed, it takes so long to build a factory anymore that, as we've learned with chips, for instance, which was a major Biden administration goal of having more of our chips produced in the U.S., turns out it takes 4, 5, 6, 7 years to build a factory that can produce the kind of the number of chips that we need for our computers. And so no one's going to build a factory knowing that President Trump will be here in 4 years, and then no one knows what the tariffs will be 4 years from now. So at this point, really the only choice that many Americans have, including American businesses who then turn around and export the price of the products that they make, the only choice they have is to pay the higher prices for goods that are imported into the U.S. when there's no American product available.
Yeah, or forego the goods, I guess, if they're an individual consumer. I don't know if you can do that as a farmer. But Barbara, we need to take a break in about a minute here. But before we do, Illinois did have experience with tariffs in President Trump's first term. What effect did that have here?
It certainly reduced the international relationships we had and the flow. And I think it's really important to adding to what Cecile just said, is there are so many products that aren't just American or just foreign. They're American put together, but with foreign components or vice versa. So there's a whole complexity to the supply chain that the current administration is not understanding at all.
Yeah, the idea that, I guess, you know, if you have a car, the steering wheel could be made in one place, engine components in another. And I guess nowadays things even go back and forth as they're being assembled. So are you
exactly?
A
I've
in
been
each spot?
To a yeah. Canadian Trade Administration office, and the typical American-made car goes across the U.S. and Canadian border at least 8 times if it's made in "quote unquote" Detroit. Yeah. So you know, every time it crosses, it gets another set of tariffs laid on it. It's going to go up a lot.
Or maybe it gets a special exemption, which we can talk about that uncertainty and what may be behind that when we come back. We're going to take a break. We are talking about tariffs. Again, Illinois is one of the top exporting states in America, top 5. So how might President Trump's tariffs affect us now and in the future? 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. More with Barbara Ribbons and Cecile Shea when we return. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about tariffs. Illinois is one of the top exporting states in America. So how might President Trump's tariffs, those that are already imposed, those that have been imposed in the past, and the new ones he seems intent on adding, how might that affect us now and in the future? We're talking about this with Barbara Ribbons, director of the Carson and Iris Varner International Business Institute at Illinois State University, and Cecile Shea, a former American diplomat and current non-resident senior fellow in global security and diplomacy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. Cecile, we were talking about the size of Illinois' economy before the break. I wonder if the sort of the strength, the size of our agriculture and manufacturing sectors, industries, is that an asset or a liability when it comes to tariffs?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question. And I think one of the things to keep in mind with the current economic situation is we're dealing with tariffs plus. So if you're a farmer, for instance, you're dealing with tariffs plus the dramatic cutback in foreign food aid. And, you know, if you're used to selling your agricultural products to the World Food Program using U.S. tax dollars, that's a source of income you're not going to have. And there's a lot of other little programs and big programs like that that have been cut that are going to impact various manufacturers. You know, we have a large economy and we have a resilient economy. So can large, we're talking about tariffs going both ways. So can large merchants like Walmart and Home Depot handle the increase in prices? Yes. Can small merchants? They're less able to. They're the ones who are hurt. Similarly, with exports, can the large exporters go to Washington, for instance, and lobby for exemptions, which you mentioned, or lobby for financial help? And the administration has already announced that it's going to give cash to farmers who are hurt by the counter tariffs. But if, again, if you're a smaller farmer or you're in a different industry where you don't have the kind of resources to deal with the paperwork involved in asking for an exemption, or to go and lobby your member of Congress to try to get some kind of workaround for the widget that you sell in Germany that now the Germans are saying they're going to buy from somewhere else, well, you're the one who's really going to be hurt in this situation. And that's really a shame, because the strength of the American economy really needs to be small and medium-sized businesses and entrepreneurs. That's really where the innovation has always come from.
Barbara Ribbons, maybe I should ask another sort of bigger picture philosophical question here, which is, what is the point of international trade? What is this supposed to benefit us? Or is this just a way for, as you hear from some people, companies to get cheap labor overseas, for example?
The whole cheap labor thing is largely overrated and overspoken. It certainly is a component of things that go on, right? Somebody moves their production to a place with cheaper labor, that makes sense. But there is a much bigger picture going on. International trade is all about really people doing in their country what they're good at. So Cecile mentioned earlier potash as a Canadian thing that they can make. We just can't, or we can't mine it the same way because we don't have the reserves. So the whole idea of trade is for everybody to do what they're really good at and then trade with each other to provide the most efficient global economy. And when we start interfering in that with trade barriers, of which tariffs is one, we're destroying that natural ability to do what we're really good at, and interfering in ways that are just manipulative in some cases. And, you know, the U.S. has more than double the number of harmful tariffs than any other country in the world already. And that was during the Biden administration. So that's before anything new happened. So we are the tariff king of the world. We tariff people more than anybody else. And so we have been manipulating this forever. And in some ways, it works, because it does protect local and American industries that sometimes need some protection, maybe for a short time. But in the big picture, if we don't ever take any of them away and we just keep adding to them, we're just pulling ourselves out of the global marketplace, essentially. And you know, Canada will find somewhere else to sell their potash to. Other farmers will benefit from lower prices around the world, and American farmers will just lose out.
I'm old enough to remember when there was seemingly a consensus on free trade in Washington, maybe to the detriment of some American workers. I know the unions were not part of that consensus. But Cecile, let me ask you, President Trump, he when he first campaigned 10 years ago now, he described NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, as the worst trade deal ever made. And during his first term, he renegotiated it, and we got the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, USMCA. I understand it was pretty similar to NAFTA, but okay. Now Trump is starting his term going after the allies with whom he signed the USMCA. What do you really understand this to be about?
Yes, it's particularly painful to me because I was serving in Canada during the negotiations for NAFTA and when Canada adopted the agreement. So I know how valuable it was for U.S. manufacturers and for U.S. consumers, as well as for Canadians. So it's painful to see it constantly under the gun like that. I think you're asking me what I think President Trump's motivation is. And honestly, it's quite opaque, because a lot of the things that he is promising are just not going to happen. If he puts higher tariffs on, as we said, I don't know, potash or on cars from Canada that are partially made in Canada, we're not going to miraculously start mining potash here or keeping all of the production facilities here in the United States. We're just not. So the question is, why is he doing this? Part of it is he sees it as a revenue stream. You know, prior to the U.S. having an income tax, almost all of our federal tax money came from tariffs, and they were very high tariffs, very high, sometimes 70 and 80% of the value of the goods. And all that that did was cause some severe depressions and really bad recessions in the 19th and early 20th century that we don't want to repeat. So it's not a good revenue stream. And the other reason is he just seems to have it in his mind that everybody is cheating him and that he can get a better deal for the U.S. on this or that. I mean, he's a negotiator at heart. But the problem is business, farmers, consumers, they hate uncertainty. They hate not knowing what's going to happen next month. And this constant, will there be tariffs? Will there be tariffs? Will other countries retaliate? Won't they retaliate? Is Germany or some other country going to put tariffs on soybeans, which are, you know, a major export for Illinois and for the Midwest, or aren't they? Makes it very hard to plan. And when you can't plan, you end up not spending money, and that then turns around and hurts the economy even more.
I can't remember which of you alluded to this earlier, but you mentioned, you know, the idea of tariffs as a revenue generator. And I don't have the soundbite, but I know Trump has talked about, well, we used to be a tariff tax country, and now we went to an income tax country, and that's fine, but, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We should go back to tariffs as income. But a lot of the money from the tariffs we did see during his first term, and Barbara, maybe you can speak to this, they were directed right back to farmers in places like Illinois to sort of make them whole for their lost market opportunities overseas, right?
That's the idea. The reality, I'm not sure, came through the way it was played. Let's just say that. And I think something Cecile just said I want to build on is Trump is looking at this as transactional. He's a real estate guy, right? Buy and sell a house. That's not how you negotiate international relationships. There's an entirely different style of bargaining that's integrative bargaining that is built on how do you build long-lasting relationships that ideally benefit both sides. And so his win-lose mentality is part of the challenge here. That's just part of the problem that I think is mingling in with then the fallout on the farmers and the small people, because they get lost in the shuffle of when he thinks he's winning and losing.
We only have about 5 minutes left in our time together. I do want to come back to this point that we hit on briefly earlier, which is the idea that the sort of, if you sort of steel man this policy argument, one of the ideals here is that this will lead to an onshoring of production. You know, we're going to start making cars again. Maybe we'll start making washing machines in Galesburg again. And these are decisions that take time. And we had somebody who called in, said cheap labor makes cheap goods. American labor, it may be more expensive, but you get a higher quality product. Cecile, can you just expound on that idea that, you know, how would that work if you think it would work? This idea that this is going to lead to onshoring of production.
Well, let's talk about what we saw 8 years ago with the first round of tariffs. I talked at length to the head of a company that makes restaurant kitchen equipment. And the tariffs that we were putting on Chinese goods were really hurting their ability to import those goods into the U.S. and sell them. But because the U.S. had not joined the Trans-Pacific Partnership, this company decided that it wasn't going to build a company in the United States. It was going to build a company in Vietnam. The duties and tariffs for products out of Vietnam are lower. Import the products into the U.S. from Vietnam, but more importantly, be able to sell the products that were made in Vietnam in all of the Trans-Pacific Partnership countries. And I think we're going to see more of that. Just because a company leaves a country where the U.S. has placed high tariffs doesn't mean they're going to manufacture in the U.S. for a few reasons. You know, one is labor. One is just we have a labor shortage in parts of this country. If you look around the Midwest, companies are having a terrible time hiring people. The immigration situation is also very unpredictable. So it's not necessarily true they're going to onshore here unless the U.S. spends a lot of money, as we have with chip production, because the Biden administration decided this was a national security issue. unless the U.S. is going to spend a lot of money helping these companies build factories, they may very well move their factories out of China or other places, which frankly probably is good for the national security. I don't have a problem with that. But they're going to build them in countries where they can export to a lot of different countries relatively inexpensively, not just build them in the U.S. and then face counter tariffs and all the other problems when they try to export the products into other countries.
Cecile, only a couple of minutes left, but you know, this administration seems to be eager to get into these trade wars. We've told Europe more broadly that they can't count on us to backstop their national security. We have a president who says he wants America to own the Gaza Strip, you know, part of the most fought over territory in the world in our lifetimes. Can you put this tariff conversation in the broader context of America's changing role in the world?
I'm glad you asked that question because, you know, the difference between my life and my parents' life is that I have never had to live through a world war. And the reason, a major reason that I have never had to live through a world war is that the U.S. led a post-war order that involved building trade relations with other country, building friendship and other types of relationships with other country, building security treaties like NATO, U.S.-Japan relationship, U.S.-Australia relationship, all security treaties with other countries. And that created a sense of oneness and of cooperation that has helped to prevent another major war. We've had wars, they've been tragedy, they've been horrible, but we haven't had anything on the scale of World War I or World War II. And if we are going to close ourselves off, if we are going to offend our closest and most dependable allies, starting with Canada, you know, our militaries operate almost as one military, the Canadian and the U.S. military. If we are going to offend those people, if we are going to threaten Denmark, a NATO ally, that we're going to somehow steal Greenland, this, we are really playing with fire. Leaving the trade issue apart, and I'm very concerned about prices and about trade and what this is going to do for manufacturers and others, I'm far, far more concerned about what this is going to do for global security, for U.S. security, and for the future of peace and some kind of harmony on the global stage.
Cecile Shea with the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, Dr. Barbara Ribbons with Illinois State University. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today on the 21st Show. And that is all the time we have for our show today. Coming up tomorrow, people in a third of Illinois counties have voted to break from Chicagoland. Indiana lawmakers have played along, proposing legislation that would lead to those counties joining the Hoosier State. We'll talk about how realistic all of this is and what drives the sentiment. We love hearing from you about our programs and your suggestions for future guests or stories. You can email us. talk@21stshow.org is the address. talk@21stshow.org. You can find that and every other way to contact us, including our voicemail line, on our website, again, 21stshow.org. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. You can now find The 21st Show on YouTube. Just search for Illinois Public Media. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.